Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, May 23rd, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Chinese state media attack White House moves to curb company access to U.S. tech.
The escalation has some firms now calling a full-blown trade war their base case scenario.
Stocks slide and havens catch a bid as investors dig in for an extended dispute.
A federal judge rejects President Trump's efforts to block banks from producing financial records to lawmakers, plus deadly tornadoes in the Midwest. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Five more Yankee home runs and another win in Baltimore. The Mets, with six runs in the eighth inning, beat Washington.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks falling as the U.S.-China trade dispute shows no sign of easing. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 28 points, Dow futures down 244, NASDAQ futures down 101, the DAX in Germany is down 1.8%, CAC in Paris down 1.6%, and the FTSE 100 down about 1.4%. Nikkei 225 in Asia fell 0.6%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down 1.6%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.6%, down $1.02 to $60.40 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.30 to $12.75.50 an ounce. 10-year Treasury up 8/32nds, yield 2.35%. Yield on the 2-year 2.19%. The euro 1.1136 against the dollar. The yen 110.03. Nathan.
Karen, trade war concerns remain the major theme this morning, with Chinese state-run media attacking U.S. moves to curb Chinese companies and warning that the Trump administration poses a threat to global business. Joe Sobchak reports from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
There is some move in China to ramp up anti-U.S. sentiments, but Chinese officials are wondering some of the same things that people in Washington are, whether this is a tactical or a strategic move by the Trump administration, whether this is something that is brought to bear into negotiations and could be lifted once a deal is made, or from a Chinese standpoint, the concern is whether the U.S. is fundamentally attempting to curb the rise of China as a global economic power.
And one top Chinese government researcher says the trade war could last another 15 years. The China Center for International Economic Exchanges predicts a long cycle of both fighting and talking.
A full-blown trade war has been one of the biggest downside risks this year, but now some firms are making it their baseline case. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the very latest. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Karen. Goldman Sachs, Nomura, and J.P. Morgan among those rewriting their forecasts. Nomura sees nearly all imports from China hit by tariff hikes. J.P. Morgan says levies could stay in place for the long haul. And economist Goldman warned that additional tariffs could easily become their base case. David Page is senior economist at AXA Investment Managers.
What's clearly evident is the risks that this doesn't get resolved are rising. And as both sides see a hardening of position, of a sort of ramping up of rhetoric, it becomes harder to de-escalate. And that's what I think is being reflected in those assessments and in our own assessments.
J.P. Morgan says relations are so strained that a Chinese company couldn't buy a trash can in the U.S. right now. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Stocks in Asia took another leg lower today, with the regional benchmark index now down 6% since President Trump's move to ramp up tariffs. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with the details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index fell to fresh January lows as equities from Sydney to Tokyo and Shanghai fell on trade concerns. The trade concerns saw the onshore yuan fall despite a stronger fix from the PBOC, while the Aussie was also lower and Australia's 10-year government yields hit record lows. But the Modi euphoria lifted the Sensex to record highs intraday, at one point trading past 40,000 points, while Indonesian stocks also rallied as Credit Suisse said investors should re-enter the market following recent declines. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. And like you just said, stocks in India are getting a lift as votes are counted from the weekend's election. So far, Prime Minister Narendra Modi has a commanding lead. Bloomberg's has Linda Min reports from New Delhi.
Narendra Modi's BJP coalition currently leading, and that does feel like it is a clean sweep. It is important because it means that if this trend persists, then Narendra Modi will have a landslide victory if he does indeed win the next 5 years. What he needs to do to ensure that he fulfills his pledges, which he has failed to do in the first 5 years. Taking a look at growth, 7% not enough to pull the poor out of poverty and also to create the 10 million jobs he needs to do per year.
Stocks in India are gaining on the news, but votes are still being counted, so still no final official result.
Meanwhile, in the UK, the pound is weaker for the third straight day as a revolt over Brexit looks set to force Theresa May from office. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with the very latest. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The pro-Brexit cabinet minister, Andrea Leadsom, who is leader of the House of Commons, has quit Theresa May's government. Meanwhile, senior rank and file members of her Conservative Party held a crisis meeting yesterday to consider her future. May's office said the PM was disappointed at the resignation but would stay focused on delivering Brexit. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Ewan, thank you. Here in the U.S., minutes from the Fed show officials pushing back against cutting interest rates anytime soon. Lindsay Paisa is chief economist at Stifel Nicolaus.
Reading the minutes, it does seem like there's still a significant amount of uncertainty regarding the pathway for rates, even in the near term. So going through just to the end of the year. Now, no one talked about an outright rate cut, but there were still questions about sitting on the sideline. Some mentioned a potential further rate increase. So still a lot of discussion going on.
Lindsay Piegza at Stifel Nicolaus. Traders are currently pricing in a near certain chance of a rate cut by year's end.
And as Deutsche Bank holds its annual shareholder meeting in Frankfurt, CEO Christian Sewing says more cutbacks are coming to the firm's investment bank. While he didn't say exactly where the cuts will be, Sewing made sure not to mention the bank's equities business. One source tells us the omission was intentional, with the CEO instead choosing to highlight successes at Deutsche Bank's equities unit.
Right now, futures are lower. S&P futures down 31 points. Dow futures down 279. And NASDAQ futures are down 110. The DAX in Germany is down about 2% now. CAC in Paris down 1.9%. FTSE 100 down 1.5%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Hey, Karen, thank you. 6:07 on Wall Street. And it is time to find out more of what's going on around the world. Here's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. A second federal judge has now rebuffed President Donald Trump's sweeping attempt to block House lawmakers from accessing his financial records, handing him another defeat in a fight that has infuriated the president and opened deep rifts with the Democrats. A New York judge refused yesterday to block congressional subpoenas seeking financial records from two banks that did business with President Trump. It comes after the president stormed out of a meeting with the Democratic leaders at the White House. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer arrived to meet with the president on infrastructure. When the president showed up,
I told Senator Schumer, Speaker Pelosi, I want to do infrastructure. I want to do it more than you want to do it. I'd be really good at that. That's what I do. But you know what? You can't do it under these circumstances. So get these phony investigations over with.
And Schumer says the president then walked out.
To watch what happened in the White House would make your jaw drop.
Earlier, Pelosi said the president was engaged in a cover-up. The National Weather Service says violent tornadoes touched down overnight near Jefferson City and Joplin, Missouri. Authorities say the tornado caused catastrophic damage. Emergency crews are trying to rescue those in need. The Pentagon is planning to brief the White House on options to deploy as many as 5,000 American troops to the Middle East amid escalating tensions with Iran. America's top air safety regulator is holding discussions with dozens of other nations today in Fort Worth, Texas. They'll be considering the fate of Boeing's troubled 737 MAX jetliner after two deadly crashes. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
It's been a globally recognized leading arbiter of aviation safety, but the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration was one of the last to decide to ground the 737 MAX. In a bid to demonstrate its commitment to safety, the agency has invited 57 delegates from 31 countries, plus the European Aviation Safety Agency and the United Nations International Civil Aviation Organization, to see how thorough it's being in its review. And Acting Chief Daniel Elwell stresses he'll be listening, too. He told reporters if there is a crisis of confidence, He's aiming to show that the world still talks together about aviation safety issues. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, thank you, Michael. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashire.
Nathan's been a good week for New York baseball, facing teams from down around the Beltway. Both have won three in a row and go for four-game sweeps this afternoon. The Yankees never want to leave Baltimore, especially Gleyber Torres and Gary Sanchez, who incredibly have combined to already this season hit 18 home runs against Orioles pitching. 10 for Torres with two more last night, 8 for Sanchez, who's homered in every game this series. DJ LeMahieu and Tyro Estrada also went deep in a 7-5 win, the Yanks' 23rd win in the last 30 games. CeCe Sabathia got the victory but has knee inflammation, likely to miss his next start. Giancarlo Stanton's returned with yet another setback due to a strained calf. The Mets, after those three bad losses in Miami, with three wins over Washington last night, 6-1. Their manager is Mickey Callaway.
Well, I mean, when you win, there's a different feel. I still think during the game, in the moment of the game, there's not a ton of difference in the dugout. When Gomez is on the field, it's definitely quieter. But, when you win, you have a different air about you, a different confidence, and I'm definitely feeling that part of it.
Mets were four outs from losing 1-0 when they erupted against Nationals closer Sean Doolittle in the eighth inning. A three-run double by Juan Lagares, followed by a three-run homer by 37-year-old Rajay Davis in his first Mets at-bat. He had just been called up from Syracuse, didn't arrive at Citi Field until the third inning. Bucks and Raptors play Game 5 tonight in Milwaukee. The series tied at 2. Toronto battling some injuries. Kawhi Leonard, a leg injury. Kyle Lowry has a bad thumb. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. In other sports news, FIFA is scrapping plans to expand the 2022 Qatar World Cup to 48 nations. Instead, it's sticking with 32 countries due to the political and logistical complexities of using another Persian Gulf nation. That means the World Cup isn't going to be expanded until 2026. FIFA has already approved a format there for 48 teams. The U.S., Canada, and Mexico will be hosting that tournament jointly. This is Bloomberg. Coming up to 6:12 on Wall Street, S&P futures now down 30 points, Dow futures down 256, NASDAQ futures down 108 points. We check in with Bloomberg Markets Managing Editor Paul Dobson straight ahead.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, 6:17 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check of the latest headlines with Hannah George at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Karen. The trade war may last another 15 years, according to a top Chinese government researcher. The chief researcher at the China Center for International Economic Exchanges predicts a long cycle of both fighting and talking. Southwest and American join airlines in Montreal today to discuss Boeing 737 MAX with the International Air Transport Association. At the same time, the FAA and other global regulators meet in Texas to review steps to get the plane airborne again. Euro area PMIs limped along in May as strength in France failed to outweigh more weakness in Germany. The composite index inched up to 51.6 from 51.5 in April. And President Trump's aid for farmers risks adding to worries about grain markets. Traders and analysts warn it will only exacerbate the soybean glut and erode future corn supplies. For the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen.
All right, Hannah, thank you. Right now, S&P futures are down 30 points. Dow futures down 251 and NASDAQ futures down 107. The DAX in Germany is down 1.9%. COMEX gold is up 0.2%, up $2.60 at $1,276.80 an ounce. NYMEX crude oil down 1.7%, or $1.06 to $60.36 a barrel. 10-year treasury up 9/32 yield 2.35%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.18%. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a second federal judge has ruled in favor of congressional Democrats seeking President Trump's financial records. The president tried to block his longtime lender, Deutsche Bank, from complying with a congressional subpoena, but a federal judge rejected that request. The National Weather Service says a violent tornado has touched down in Missouri, causing possible fatalities and heavy damage. The service reports that a confirmed large and destructive tornado was observed over Jefferson City late last night. In baseball, the Yankees downed the Orioles 7-5. The Mets beat the Nationals 6-1. The Red Sox won along with the A's. The Giants lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 6:20 on Wall Street, and we are live for the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning, I'm John Tucker. The trade tension showing little signs of easing, and that is certainly showing up in markets this morning. Let's take the pulse of the markets with Bloomberg's Paul Dobson. He's Markets Managing Editor, joining us from London this morning. Paul, good to talk to you. Let's start where the pressure points are, and we'd have to go to the Asian currencies for that.
Absolutely right. That's one of the real areas that investors are focusing on right now. Everyone's been very focused on China's yuan, which seems to have stabilized somewhat just below that 7 per dollar mark. But the tension is kind of seeping its way into other Asian markets as well now. So we've had increasingly alarming sounding warnings from the Korean Central Bank talking about how it's worried about the pace of the currency's depreciation there. Likewise, Indonesia, the central bank is trying to fight against too much weakness in its currency. So that's where the pressure points are really starting to show. At the moment, holding, but you know, kind of there's that build up there. You can feel the tension in those markets.
So it begs the question, are we at crisis levels?
Not at crisis levels. If you look at volatility gauges, they're still relatively subdued. I get the impression, though, that each day that there isn't a resolution in the US-China row, if you want, or every day there's an escalation at the moment, that ratchets up the pressure on those markets as well. And as we were hearing earlier, you know, that's now feeding into the equities markets as well. Some pretty brutal losses coming through in Europe today, and that's feeding into those futures for the US gauges as well.
Okay, so what are the safe havens?
Number one port of call on everybody's list is either Japanese yen or, if you're looking to the US, the treasury market. 30-year yields there today, the lowest since the 1st of January or the start of January 2018, which is, you know, really something. Yesterday we had the Fed minutes, of course. That gave us the impression that what Powell said in his testimony was what the whole Fed was thinking, and yet all the same people are still piling into these bonds. Nobody's scared about inflation. Everybody wants the haven right now.
Okay, so is the dollar also acting as a haven? And even though we have futures down this morning, are U.S. stocks to some degree a haven for investors?
The dollar is an interesting question. It feels like for that flight out of EM markets, we've seen a lot of weakness in Latin America as well as those Asian currencies I was talking about, then that definitely reflates the dollar. But at the same time, where people have been coming for funding for carry trades has been more in the euro and the European currency. So if you saw a really dramatic unwind in that carry trade, it might push those up, ironically, against the dollar, despite the weakness that's being seen in some of the data. As for U.S. stocks, you know, I think that it's a little bit hard to tell. Eventually, this is going to boomerang back and hurt everybody if we don't find some kind of a circuit breaker at some point.
The rules dictate we avoid talking about elections specifically, but is there ever going to come a time when U.K. investors who've been stashing cash at home are going to be able to pounce on the pound?
It's the question that everybody's asking. So far, there's not much sign of it. We're down for a 14th day in the pound against the euro, which is the longest losing streak on record. We've been speaking to large investors, the likes of Investec Asset Management, Aberdeen Standard and Pictet, asking them, you know, when is somebody going to catch this falling knife? But what they're telling us is, so long as this Brexit chaos that's going on in the background, as well as the trade war sort of tension continues, and no one's really willing to step in. So for now, it looks like, you know, barring dead cat bounces and the such like, the pound's going to remain under pressure.
Okay, the talk about the Bank of England cutting rates, I guess we could probably forget about that for now.
I think, you know, before there was
the
question, there you go, of the Bank of England raising rates. But investors are rapidly pricing that out and now are looking for more likely a cut. And that, again, takes another prop of support away from the currency.
Paul, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Bloomberg's Paul Dobson, our Markets Managing Editor from London. This is on the morning when futures in the U.S. all pointing to a lower open. S&P futures, they are down 1%, a 28-point decline right now. The Dow futures, they're down 242 points. That's down about 0.9%. The Nasdaq E-mini futures, 101 points lower, down 1.4%. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, John. 6:25 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, are markets pricing in a prolonged trade war with China? That and more of the business, financial, and economic news you need to start the day. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg. Good morning.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks are falling around the world as U.S.-China trade tensions show little sign of easing. S&P futures are down 1%. The stock Europe 600 is lower by 1.5%. In Asia, the CSI 300 index fell 1.8% to its lowest level in 3 months.
Yeah, full-blown trade war has been one of the biggest downside risks this year, but now some firms are making it their base case. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the very latest. John.
And Nathan, economists at some of the biggest financial institutions are growing increasingly pessimistic. Goldman Sachs, Nomura, and J.P. Morgan among those rewriting their forecasts. Analysts at Nomura have made a 25% hike in levies on another $300 billion of imports. Their baseline forecast, they see it as a 65% probability before year end. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you. Meanwhile, minutes from the Fed show officials in no hurry to move interest rates up or down, and an escalation in the U.S.-China trade war could keep them on hold even longer. Bloomberg Markets reporter Danny Berger.
The Fed didn't even mention a rate cut, so that didn't seem like it was on the table. They're also saying that the inflationary issues, they're going to be transitory. So this might be a bit more hawkish than markets had assumed.
Checking treasuries this morning, the 10-year up 8/32, the yield 2.35%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.18%.
In India, stocks are gaining as preliminary election results show Prime Minister Narendra Modi set to win a majority.
In Europe, the pound is weaker for the third straight day as Theresa May's premiership hangs by a thread. A high-profile cabinet minister quit in a growing revolt over Brexit could force the British leader from power.
Euro area private sector output remained subdued in May as demand stayed stagnant and companies scaled back expansion plans. A purchasing managers index for the period inched up to 51.6.
Deutsche Bank CEO Christian Sewing says more cutbacks are coming to the firm's investment bank. While he didn't say exactly where the cuts will be, Sewing made sure not to mention the bank's equities business.
And shares of Tesla are taking another leg lower. The latest concern comes from Loop Ventures co-founder Gene Munster, who says the company will probably miss its 2019 delivery target. Tesla shares are down about 4% in early trading.
Futures again lower. S&P futures down 28 points. Dow futures down 242. And Nasdaq futures are down 100. The DAX in Germany is down 1.8%. CAC in Paris down 1.7%. And the FTSE 100 down 1.4%. COMEX gold is up about 0.2%. Up $1.90 to $12.76.10 an ounce. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. 6:33 on Wall Street, and the news update is brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking, technology-driven advisory and accounting firm helping clients be in a position of strength in today's modern business landscape. Visit Withum.com to learn more. Now here's Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. The National Weather Service says a violent tornado touched down in Jefferson City, Missouri, causing possible fatalities and heavy damage. Jasper County Emergency Management Director Keith Stammer says there are reports of damage to homes north of Joplin.
We have fire and police and EMS units currently stationed there, and they are doing door-to-door searching.
A line of dangerous storms also moved through Oklahoma. About 15 tornadoes have been reported in the two states. It's another defeat in President Donald Trump's effort to block access to his financial records. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
A federal judge in New York has rejected the president's request to keep banks from producing financial records to lawmakers. The president calls it a fishing expedition and harassment. Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff calls it a clear message.
It sends a message that two different judges, same conclusion, not just that you're wrong, but your arguments don't even raise serious legal questions. And what's more, we're not going to be a party to an effort to delay Congress in the discharge of its oversight responsibilities.
The banks involved, Capital One and Deutsche Bank. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Meanwhile, Republicans have criticized the investigations into President Trump, GOP Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana.
I say this gently, and I say this hopefully constructively to my friends in the House leadership. The House leadership needs to urinate or get off the pot.
Kennedy's comments come after an infrastructure meeting between top Democrats and President Trump unraveled within minutes. Earlier, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the president was engaged in a cover-up. The president abruptly walked out of the briefing, declaring he would no longer work with them unless they drop all congressional investigations.
I don't do cover-ups. You people know that probably better than anybody.
In a letter to her colleagues, Pelosi accused the president of throwing a public temper tantrum. The Pentagon is planning to brief the White House on options to deploy as many as 5,000 American troops to the Middle East amid escalating tensions with Iran. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, thank you, Michael. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stanshire.
Nathan, Camden Yards has always been a home run friendly park, and the Orioles have brutal pitching. They're on pace to give up the most home runs in baseball history. They've already served up 105. The Yankees last night hit five more. They won 7-5. Gleyber Torres homered twice. He's hit 10 against Baltimore this season. And Gary Sanchez has now hit 8. The Yanks go for a four-game sweep this afternoon. So did the Mets against Washington last night, battle of Cy Young winners, although Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer came in a combined 5-10. The Nationals led 1-0 with two outs in the eighth inning. Juan Lagares with a three-run double. Rajay Davis, a three-run homer, the veteran outfielder's first Met at bat, just called up from Syracuse due to Brandon Nimmo's neck injury. Didn't get to Citi Field until the third inning. The Mets won 6-1. Robinson Cano had to leave with a calf injury suffered while hustling. Yes, running out a ground ball. That's something that Cano has often, including lately, been heavily criticized for not doing. You can go home again. Juwan Howard, former Michigan star, named the Wolverines' new basketball coach, and John Davidson, former Rangers goalie, longtime broadcaster, now taking over the rebuilding effort as the Rangers' new team president.
There's a lot of work to do here. There's no shortcuts. It's nothing but hard work, and it takes patience and resolve. And I really want to make sure that I use the word patience and I use the word resolve, because we're going to be in a battle here to get this club to be better. But you have to be patient when you go through a build like this. It's just what it is.
AD replaces the retiring Glenn Sather. He's already run teams in St. Louis and Columbus. For Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanshower. Nathan?
Thank you, John. It's 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. In 2002, the IRS agreed to let certain private tax preparers provide software allowing low-income Americans to file their taxes for free, but the system hasn't worked. A class action lawsuit against TurboTax alleges it duped millions of customers into paying unnecessary fees. The suit argues that TurboTax hid the free version of the software and guided users to similar-sounding products with fees. The principle that low-income taxpayers should be able to file for free is surely right, and the IRS could easily provide the necessary software itself and at relatively modest cost. Sadly, bipartisan legislation to modernize the IRS doesn't address this issue. Lawmakers ought to think again and require the IRS to do the job it never should have been allowed to outsource in the first place. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Coming up to 6:39 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
We've been following developments in Botswana, which has the world's biggest population of elephants. And you're not likely to hear any pachyderms trumpeting this news. The government has lifted its suspension on elephant hunting, a move that's likely to spark further debate on a politically charged issue in the southern African nation. Tourism, driven by the fascination with elephants, accounts for a fifth of Botswana's economy, and the government is vowing to ensure that reinstatement of hunting is done in an orderly and ethical manner. The number of elephants in Botswana has almost tripled to 160,000 since 1991, according to the government. Increasing conflict between farmers and the animals, which at times destroy crops, damage ecosystems, and kill villagers. While hunting wouldn't meaningfully reduce the number of elephants, income from the sport could benefit communities in areas where the animals live. The average elephant hunt costs $45,000 in neighboring countries where the practice is legal. And that's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
All right, Bob, thank you. It is coming up to 6:40 on Wall Street. At 9:45 a.m. Wall Street time, we get preliminary U.S. PMI data for May. Estimates call for subdued growth in manufacturing and services. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
We could see a global pattern emerging in today's PMI reports, a bottoming out, perhaps. PMI data in the euro area showed signs of stabilization in April, with service industries offsetting weakness in manufacturing. Economists are forecasting a similar pattern, stabilization, in today's May data on the American economy. Finitel, Judice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
We do have preliminary PMI data for May out of the euro area. It shows strength in France, but weakness in Germany. The composite euro area PMI index inched up to 51.6. That was after a 51.5 level in April. S&P futures down 27 points now. Dow futures down 232. NASDAQ futures down 96 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up, the morning call brought to you by Columbia Bank. Yield Plus Checking from Columbia Bank takes the stable growth of a high-rate CD and combines it with the freedom of a checking account. Visit a branch today or ColumbiaBankOnline.com. Count on Columbia.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures are lower this morning. We go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are under pressure, helped by the trade war and Theresa May's situation in the U.K. Dow futures currently down 233 points. Sesame's dropped 27, and NASDAQ futures are lower by 93. The U.S. 10-year yield at 2.35%. Oil is sinking, and Shanghai fell 1.4% overnight. European markets are also under pressure, led by 1.7% losses in Germany. Back in the U.S., on the economic front, at 8:30, initial jobless claims. At 9:45, market U.S. manufacturing PMI. At 10 o'clock, new home sales. And at 11 o'clock, the Kansas City Fed. After the bell last night, L Brands boosted the low end of its guidance. Shares are higher by 12% in the pre-market. And regarding earnings this morning, Medtronic just reported EPS beat estimates. In other news, Tesla is under pressure again, with Loop Ventures and Morgan Stanley giving increasingly bearish commentary. And wrapping things up, Philip Morris was upgraded to equally over at Barclays. Chipotle downgraded to underperform at BMO. In the biotech space, Amgen upgraded to buy at Citigroup, and Target upgraded to overweight over at JP Morgan. Live from the First of Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a federal judge in New York rejected President Trump's request to keep his banks from producing financial records to lawmakers. The ruling hands House Democrats a second courtroom win this week in their efforts to look into the president's finances. Cleanup efforts are underway in central Missouri after severe weather whipped through the area last night, leaving devastation and destruction. The National Weather Service says a violent tornado touched down in Jefferson City, causing possible fatalities. In baseball, the Yankees down the Orioles 7-5. The Mets beat the Nationals 6-1. The Red Sox won along with the A's. The Giants lost. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg, Harriet Tubman won't be on the face of a $20 bill anytime soon. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said that a decision probably would not be made until after President Trump leaves office. During the campaign, Trump said the movement to replace Andrew Jackson was pure political correctness. However, Nathan, to Senator Jean Shaheen, the delay sends an unmistakable message to women and girls and communities of color.
Now, we do know, Michael, that President Trump put the portrait of President Jackson back in the Oval Office after he took office. It sort of raises questions about whether even, you know, the face of currency has turned political.
Yeah, interesting. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. We're at 6:50 on Wall Street. Time to check what else is happening in D.C. Not just currency moves, but some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the Pentagon considering a plan for up to 5,000 troops in the Middle East as tensions with Iran continue to rise. President Trump holds a farmers' aid meeting today in the midst of the trade dispute with China. And the president now vowing not to work with Democrats on bipartisan issues until they finish what he calls their phony investigations. For more on all this, Wendy Schiller is back with us, political science professor at Brown University. So I guess it's safe to say, Wendy, that Infrastructure Week is over.
It was over before it started. I mean, this is an interesting thing for the Democrats. Apparently, you know, they sort of anticipated that Trump would blow up the meeting, maybe not the way that he did it, but they anticipated it. And, you know, he went out there. There was already a pre-sign out there waiting for him in the Rose Garden. So, you know, he doesn't have the money. You know, it's true that Trump would relish an infrastructure bill. It is true. He said to them, this is what I do. And that is his record. He likes to build things. So in all fairness to the president, you know, this is something that he would enjoy. He'd put himself into it. He could probably try to get it through Congress. But the Democrats were getting signals from the Republicans, both in the House, but also really in the Senate, that there isn't the money for it, and they don't want to pay for such a big spending bill right now. So Pelosi walks in knowing this is something that's going to advantage Trump and also knowing that they don't have the money for it. So I don't think she was totally disappointed that it fell apart.
But in terms of, you know, the whole overall theme of partisan gridlock in Washington, I mean, there was a lot of talk after the Democrats took over the House in November that things were going to grind to a halt. I mean, is that where we are now?
No, I mean, it's where we are this week because the economy is really good. There is no particular urgency. It's May. You know, in ancient times, they started to do appropriations bills in May and clear them one by one. And I mean, that's 30 years ago. And they don't do that anymore. They just combine everything at the end and they basically go to the wire and they get it done. They were hoping to have a budget negotiated. Now, you can do a budget resolution, which is not appropriations, and get that done as a blueprint like Paul Ryan did a couple of years ago. They could still get that done. Because it helps the president. The one thing that Pelosi knows is that the shutdown, any kind of government shutdown, hurts Trump much more going closer to 2020 than it did before. And he doesn't want it. So since she knows that, she's got that in her back pocket, too. And, you know, she's got to appease her base, and that's what she's doing. And she can count votes. I mean, what people underestimate about Nancy Pelosi is that she always knows where the votes are, both in her chamber and in the Senate. She knows what's doable. And in this case, I think she figured infrastructure wasn't, at the moment, doable.
It's interesting that you raise the point of the government shutdown, you know, something that when the president the last time there was that debate over a government shutdown, he said that he'd be happy to own a shutdown. I mean, are we at a similar position here in talking about this infrastructure deal that is now off the table?
Yeah, but I mean, if he gets it back on the table and they end up passing it, he'll take credit for it. Right. So, and his problem is really not the Democrats. Democrats, as we know, typically like to spend money, even when we're in the deficit times. It's the Republicans who don't want to spend money. And the infrastructure bill, because the House is controlled by the Democrats, would have to have things like mass transit money, would have to have smart things, green things, environmental things. These are all things the Republicans do not want to touch. Their base, particularly going into 2020 in the Senate, is Southern. It's a lot of the Trump states in the South and the Southeast and the West. So they have a lot of seats up, but that's in Trump country where people don't use mass transit as much. So there are parts of that bill that will literally not be something that the Senate wants to pass, the Senate Republicans. So in that sense, the landscape is very complicated. If he can navigate that, he comes out looking like a really big winner.
Yeah, when you talk about the policy permutations of an infrastructure deal along with the spending, it makes you wonder whether this debate is going to carry on into next year and potentially, you know, color the races that are going on, not just the presidential race, but, you know, every House seat's back up next year.
Well, right, the House seat and, of course, the 40 seats the Democrats won. So if you look at where the Democrats won, it's a combination of more rural areas, not super rural, but and also some cities, right, so where everybody could benefit from some infrastructure. And if the economy actually slows, not necessarily a recession, but starts to slow down, clearly an infrastructure bill that would allow things to get done next summer of 2020, that'd be good for everybody. So you know when the economy goes down and they need a boost, they're going to want to spend some money. So Trump knows that. Pelosi knows that. And I think they're buying their time. As for the investigations, you know, Trump's got a point. So, you know, Mueller didn't come up with anything. You know, that game is probably over for the Democrats. But if Trump would just release some more of financials, and if Barr would just release the Mueller report to the Intelligence Committee, now he's going to release portions of it, but not all of it, this would probably go away in some ways, and Trump would come out saying, look, it's over. I've done what I have to do. I want to run the country. And it's unclear to me why, you know, that's the big question mark, why he doesn't take that political route, which seems like something that could shut down a lot of the things that he's complaining about.
Now, we only got about 30 seconds or so left. So where do you see things going from here when the president is essentially saying, you know, finish your investigations, but I'm not going to give you anything to the Democrats?
Well, also one thing that Pelosi and Schumer and also Mitch McConnell understand is that he needs some victories going into 2020. You know, he won narrowly, very narrowly in 2016, and he has not really increased his base at all in any of the swing states. He needs to show he can run the country. He needs some wins. He's going to need trade. It's been a big issue for him in his presidency, and he's going to need something else, and they're the only people that can give it to him. So in that sense, they're going to buy their time till he comes back to the table.
Brown University political science professor Wendy Schiller, always great talking Washington with you. Thank you so much. You can read more about what's happening in the nation's capital on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal, and listen to Bloomberg Radio in D.C. on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 6:56 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report. Here's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Karen. Well, a school counselor, Sam Cortella, wanted to find a way to form a closer bond with his young daughter. Well, there was something they both loved, food and their Puerto Rican heritage. What they formed was Poppy BB.
We started making sandwiches. We made these little small sliders to start out, based on the signature street sandwich, which is called the tripleta. That's the big sandwich in Puerto Rico, and it's made of three meats. People have different variations. Ours is pork shoulder, and then we do a ground beef, and we do a chicken breast, and all those are marinated.
Well, next stop for Poppy BB was a street fair where they sold out. The challenges have included permits and fees and finding the best and freshest ingredients. The majority of customer traffic has been generated by Instagram. Their handle is PAPI_VIVI. Now, while he drives an Uber to make ends meet, a food cart is now planned in Framingham, Massachusetts. And that is today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. Karen.
All right. Sounds good. John Tucker, thank you. Tesla shares, we're watching them this morning. They're down 3.8% in early trading as analysts at Loop Ventures and Morgan Stanley gave increasingly bearish commentary on the U.S. electric car maker. And we'll continue to watch those shares this morning. They are poised for seventh day of losses. And Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.